This is NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Our guest today, Kevin Smith, is perhaps best known in New Hampshire politics for his work against same-sex marriage. As the former executive director of the group Cornerstone Action, Smith became the polite, articulate face of the anti-gay marriage movement. But now, as he runs for the Republican nomination for governor, Smith says same-sex marriage and other social issues won't be his major concern. This campaign, he says, is all about innovative solutions to boost New Hampshire's economy.
And that's why I'm offering a bold new vision for our state. And fresh new leadership that's undergirded in a conservative philosophy that says it is not state government that creates jobs, but it's state government that creates the environment and economic atmosphere for good jobs to be created in the private sector.
Smith's main opponent in the Republican primary is former State Board of Education chair and longtime lawyer Ovid Lamontagne. The other candidate is Robert Tarr, a political activist from Manchester. Although this is Smith's first statewide race, he's running a vigorous campaign, emphasizing his youth and, at the same time, his long experience in New Hampshire government and politics. Today in The Exchange, Kevin Smith is here. Let's get your questions and comments in, too. Republicans, we're talking about your gubernatorial primary today. So what do you want to know about where Kevin Smith stands on the issues? What do you hope the next governor does for our state? Also, if you're an undecided Republican voter in this primary, what information might help you make your choice? Give us a call. The exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Kevin Smith, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Laura, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me in.
Well, you were bringing to this campaign, I was going over your background, a variety of experiences, a term in the legislature, mm-hmm. time in Governor Benson's office, time at Health and Human Services, time working in a local school, and then, as I said, most recently at Cornerstone Action.
Right.
Sum it up for us, if you could. How does this experience make you ready to step in on day one as governor?
Sure. Well, that's exactly what I've been saying. You know, the governor's term, it's a two-year term, which means there's no time for on-the-job training. You know, you need to know what your plan is when you're going into office and how you're going to go about executing that plan. And you really need to be ready to roll on day one. And especially in a state like New Hampshire, where, as I said, it's two-year terms. You have to hit the road running with your budget right away. And if you don't know how all of these things work, you know, how the, you know, the legislature operates and who the stakeholders are, it can be learning it for your first 2 years while you're governor. I don't think we have the time to do that in this state. There's a lot of challenges that we need to face right in that first year. And I think I'm ready and equipped to start facing those challenges because I have seen state governments from so many different facets, from having served in the legislature, worked in the governor's office, helped run a state agency, and been on the outside as well, working on different issues. It's a complex job, but one I'm certainly up to doing.
Well, you focused a lot of this campaign on what you call bold solutions for the economy and really focusing on boosting businesses.
Right.
But looking at your resume, most of your experience is in social services, you know,
sure.
Health and Human Services, education, working on social issues at Cornerstone. So where's the economic tie in there?
Well, I mean, right now I am a small business owner. I am self-employed. I have my own consulting business. And certainly, you know, I face the things that many small business owners face, things like the high cost of health insurance. I mean, I'm paying a little over $17,000 a year right now out of pocket for health insurance.
Wow.
For my family. That's crazy. And, you know, I run into a lot of small business owners, Laura, who have told me, and when I say, what do you pay for health insurance costs? And they've said, Kevin, I'm not even carrying health insurance anymore. And to me, that's an unacceptable choice when they're faced with having to either, you know, pay through the roof for the cost of health insurance, or they're not purchasing at all because, you know, they're taking a risk that nothing catastrophic is going to happen. Those are two unacceptable choices, I think. And as a state, that is an issue that's got to be addressed right away. To me, it's that and the pension issue are the two ticking time bombs in the state of New Hampshire that if we don't address immediately, we're going to have big problems down the road. And I feel like we've kind of kicked the can down the road in that area for far too long. One of the things I've said I would do, Laura, in my first 90 days of becoming governor is to really convene a working roundtable of experts from the entire healthcare industry, whether it's, you know, folks representing doctors, the hospitals, the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance carriers, the patients themselves, getting them all around the table, putting the best and brightest around and saying, let's put all the solutions on the table. Let's put every idea on the table and see if we can't come up with something to move the state forward in a direction where we can have good quality care, but making sure it's affordable as well in our state, because it's something that, again, we can't afford to kick the can down the road in this area any longer. It's killing small businesses. It's one of the variables that businesses look at when they're deciding whether or not to do business in New Hampshire. And when they see the cost of what it means to offer insurance to their employees, it's a lot.
So since you're talking about healthcare, I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
You convene this roundtable of doctors and you know, healthcare providers and hospital owners and insurers and so forth. What if most of them say, you know, we kind of like this Affordable Care Act that's now coming to the states, and we think that's the way we should go, what Republicans call Obamacare?
Sure. Well, I'd say, well, then we got to find a way to pay for it if that's the case. You know, one of the things I've said is that, you know, I would oppose the expansion of Medicaid, and not because it's an ideological position, but because there's no way for the state to pay for it. And when the federal government says, well, we'll pay for 100% the first 3 years and 90%, you know, every year thereafter, I look at IDEA, special ed, back in the 1970s when we passed that act on the federal level. The federal government's supposed to be funding that at 40% right now, not even 100%, 40%. And they've been averaging a 17% funding level over the last 30 years. So the federal government can't even meet its obligation for fully funding special ed for the last 30 years. On top of that, they've racked up a $15 trillion debt. And now they're telling us they're going to pay for every state's Medicaid expansion. I'm not buying it, Laura. So I'm not about to put the state in a position where we're going to move towards insolvency like California is closely getting there, because we have no way to pay for the Medicaid expansion. As it is right now, I think you know, New Hampshire reimburses Medicaid at one of the lowest costs of any state in the country. So we can barely pay for our own Medicaid recipients right now. And this is putting a big burden on the hospitals, because they're having to increase, you know, that's why all of us who have private insurance are seeing our costs go up higher and higher, because they have to make up for the difference somewhere. So, you know, I'm sure there will be people around that table that will say, yeah, we do like the Affordable Care Act. And if that's the case, great. Let's put that on, you know, on the table as well. But we got to, this cannot be a partisan issue. You know, it cannot become polarized. It can't be a Republican-Democrat issue. This has to be a New Hampshire-based issue that we will solve with New Hampshire-based solutions.
I want to ask you one more question.
Sure.
About your primary campaign, a little bit of getting to know you.
Yeah.
Since you're still kind of new on the political scene. You've said again and again in this campaign that social issues like gay marriage and abortion aren't your prime focus in this campaign for governor. But looking back at your career, they were important at Cornerstone. They were important when you worked for Bob Smith. They were important when you served in the legislature, leading to some speculation that you're de-emphasizing these issues now because you don't want to alienate moderate Republicans and independents. What do you think? Are you setting these aside? Are you not highlighting them because you don't want to?
No, but what I've said is that, look, when I talk to the average voter out there, even within GOP circles, they're asking me questions about the pocketbook issues. And that's where most people, I think, want to see their elected officials' focus be today. I think there were folks that felt that the Democratic legislature had gone too far to the left in the social issues, and there were folks that believe now the Republican legislature has gone too far to the right. In fact, I was very public in my comments early on in saying that the legislature would be wise to keep the main thing, and that being the pocketbook issues, how you're going to bring jobs to the state, how you're going to spur economic development. And the reality is, if you look at my record, for instance, when I was at the Juvenile Justice Department, for 4 years, I feel I advocated very effectively on behalf of juvenile justice issues. And in fact, those who didn't know me from my previous work in Governor Benson's office, I probably didn't know whether I was a Democrat or a Republican, because I kept it, you know, very professional in what my role was there. But kind of the same thing, if I become governor, you know, just because I advocated strongly on behalf of juvenile justice issues doesn't mean that those issues are going to be at the forefront of my campaign or as governor either. Certainly there are issues I know a lot about and I care a lot about. But at the same time, you know, if your focus is all over the place and you're not honing in on things that are really of the most important things right now, I don't think you're going to get a lot accomplished. And that's why we've got to keep, I think, our focus, you know, very, very now. And that has to be, I believe, on the fiscal issues.
I definitely want to talk to you about some of your tax proposals in a couple minutes, because that's big in this campaign. And that's a difference between you and Ovid LaMontagne. But let me also invite our listeners to join us, Kevin Smith. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.com. exchange.org. Again today in The Exchange, our coverage of New Hampshire's gubernatorial primaries continues with Republican Kevin Smith. We're talking about where he stands on the issues, digging into his background. And Republican voters, we want to hear from you. This is your gubernatorial primary. Join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. Just picking up on one more thing that you said there, Mr. Smith. You said the legislature, correct me if I'm wrong, went too far to the right on the social issues, just like you said the Democrats went too far to the left on social issues. Is that what you're saying?
Well, what you know, one of the things I said, and again, this is in public domain, so it's not like you know anyone couldn't look up these comments. You know, when they were bringing up the repeal of the same-sex marriage legislation, I made the comment that, you know what, it's fine that they're taking that up, but they shouldn't do what the Democrats did, which was spend an inordinate amount of time. You know, the Democrats were spending nearly 9 months on things like gay marriage and the transgender bathroom bill. Meanwhile, you had a huge budget deficit that was looming, and people were saying, why are they spending all this time on social issues when they should be concentrating on fiscal issues?
Well, and they say, no, we didn't do that.
Well, but the record shows that they did do that. And so what I told the Republican legislature, I said, look, don't spend all the time on it. You know, take the votes, take an up or down vote, and let the chips fall wherever they're going to fall on it. But you shouldn't be spending an inordinate time on those particular issues.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You know, since we're talking about the Republican legislature, the House Republicans, if you are the nominee, Democrats will say, Kevin Smith supports the Bill O'Brien agenda, which is, and they will say, you know, bad for New Hampshire families, hurt students, hurt poor people, and so forth. What are you going to say to that?
There's going to be a lot of disappointed people who go to the ballot this year and see Bill O'Brien's name isn't on their ballot. I mean, I think there's only two towns that he's actually running in. Look, the reality is that as governor, you know, you set the agenda. And I think, you know, the governor can use it. Structurally, it's a very weak office. But you can use the power of the bully pulpit, and you can use it as a leadership position to say this is what our agenda is going to be. And what I've said is that, to me, it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican legislature, a Democratic legislature. They're all going to have a seat at my table, and we're going to work together to get what's best done for the New Hampshire citizens.
All right. And coming up, we'll start taking your calls, and we'll look at some of the differences between our guest today, Kevin Smith, and his main opponent in this primary, Ovid Lamontagne. Your calls are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. Keep in touch with NHPR wherever you go with our new iPhone app. It lets you stream us 24 hours a day, download all of our podcasts, and receive news updates throughout the day. Check out the new NHPR app available through Apple's App Store, or if you have an old app, you can simply press the update button to download the new version. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Antioch University, New England, and Keene, offering 7 different master's and doctoral programs in environmental studies, antiochne.edu. From Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire, with locations in Nashua and Pelham. Details at collinsdentistry.com. And from Raff Young and Pignatelli, celebrating 25 years of innovative client-focused solutions for businesses and nonprofits throughout New England. RaffLaw.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we continue our coverage of the New Hampshire gubernatorial primary with Republican Kevin Smith. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We're looking for Republican voters today who might need some more information as they make this choice as to who to pick for governor for the Republican nomination. So join us at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. And Kevin Smith, let's take some calls now. And Jonathan joins us from Raymond. Jonathan, you're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you for having me. Kevin, you want to be our next chief executive officer, the CEO of New Hampshire. I have 3 related questions. How many people have you managed in the private sector for-profit group? How many people have you hired, and how many people have you fired? Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan, for the
call. Sure. Thanks. Well, you know, I've managed a number of employees at a number of the positions I've been in. Certainly when I was the assistant director of our juvenile justice department, I managed our maintenance department, our quality insurance department, our financial unit, which totaled at least 30 employees. A number of those employees I hired, a number of those employees I fired, which, by the way, the personnel rules in dealing with state government are very different than they are in the private sector. And when I ran Cornerstone, again, we had a number of employees there as well, who we brought on throughout the 3 years during my tenure there. So have experience in both the private sector and the public sector as well in terms of dealing with and managing employees. And I'll tell you this too, Laura, that you know the caller commented upon being the CEO, the chief executive. If you go into state government believing it works exactly like the private sector, you're in for a rude awakening.
I wanted to ask you about that
because
I have heard you say things like that. It's not exactly right to say I'm going to come in and run it all like a business.
No, it isn't. And the thing is you can bring good business principle and good business acumen into state government. For instance, doing one of the things I did when I was at Juvenile Justice, which was setting up a system of metrics on a lot of the programs that we were running to figure out whether or not they were working or not and putting outcomes on those particular programs. But you're not the CEO per se in the sense that you have three co-equal bodies. You know, you have a legislature that they have their own agenda. Of course, you have the judicial branch as well. And then you also have a five-person executive council. So it's very different than saying running a business per se where you can call all the shots. As governor, certainly, again, you can use that bully pulpit to your leverage, but at the same time, you have to recognize that government operates very differently than how a business is structurally operates. And if you don't get that before you go in, you're going to run into problems.
Did Governor Benson not get that?
I think he wanted to run it like a business, and I think he got frustrated with how the process worked and that it didn't work fast enough. That's I think what probably frustrated him the most about being governor. He wanted it to work faster. He wanted it to work more like a business. But I think he realized once he was in there that structurally it can't always happen that way.
Now, the current governor, John Lynch, ran as a successful businessman. I'm the turnaround guy.
Right.
You probably remember that. And his CEO style has been to let the legislature, in many instances, take the lead, do the research, do the work, make decisions, and then he sort of signs off or doesn't sign off on it. What do you think about that CEO leadership style?
It was surprising to me that him being a former CEO would run it that way too, because I would have thought he would have been more hands-on as someone who was a CEO. And I believe as governor, you have to be hands-on with the legislature. You know, you have to work with them to make sure that any bills that are coming to your desk, that there's no surprises. And I think it was something that has frustrated both Republicans and Democrats over the years, is that he was so hands-off with the legislature. You know, when it came to things like responding to natural disasters, any kind of tragic shooting or crisis we had in the state, those sorts of things, I think Governor Lynch did a great job at responding to those areas. But when it came to actually showing leadership on the legislative level and setting policy for the state of New Hampshire, he really wasn't anywhere to be found. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think we could have gotten a lot of good done over 8 years. And instead, those are now challenges that are facing the state when the next governor takes over.
Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And thanks for that call. And let's take another one, if we could. Jan in Plymouth is up. Hi, Jan. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Kevin Smith.
Hey, thanks. I'm a lifelong Republican and left behind by that party, and now I'm an independent. I'm a swing voter. My comment today, first of all, I wanted to preface it by saying that I've been an owner of one company, individually owned, and then a part owner of four other companies. Two of those companies had 250 employees, so I'd like to preface my comment with that.
Sure.
My question about that roundtable that you discussed, on the health care issue, is when I heard you rattle off the groups that you were going to have at that table, all of those groups at the table represented there on those chairs are groups that have everything to benefit and gain from the system the way it's set up currently.
So you'd like some business people at that table, sounds like.
Well, no. I mean, I think those people are there. The healthcare industry is there. The doctors are there. The pharmaceuticals are there. My question is, where are the taxpayers at the table? And not just the people who are using the healthcare system, but some people at the table who are uninsured and unable to purchase insurance. I feel like we need to totally overhaul our healthcare system and I happen to be a proponent of Obamacare, which I like to call the health, the Affordable Health Care Act rather than Obamacare.
Okay, well, Jen, thanks a lot for calling in. And probably, in fairness, you couldn't list every single person at this proverbial roundtable.
Well, no, and in fact, one of the things I did say was that you have small business owners that cannot afford health insurance today. And so, yeah, certainly they should be at the table. Anyone who's involved in having to take part in our healthcare system, which is virtually pretty much everybody, needs to have a seat at that table again to have, you know, make sure we're putting the best ideas forward and coming up with the best solutions. But I think it's very important we do that because, as I said before, this is too important an issue to let go, letting go a number of years. We have to come up with a good New Hampshire-based solution today.
Jen, thanks a lot for joining us. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you about some of the differences with your main primary opponent, Ovid Lamontagne, who was with us last Tuesday.
Yeah.
And just before we get into the specifics, broadly first, almost philosophically, what would you say divides you and Mr. Lamontagne?
Well, I think, you know, where we've been picking up a lot of our support everywhere we go around the state is when I talk about my substantive plan for the state of New Hampshire. You know, what I've said from the very beginning is that New Hampshire needs to lead the way. You know, there's no reason why we can't become the most economically competitive state in the country over the next 10 years. And I've come up with a specific economic plan that I think will get us there. And, you know, and people can disagree with certain parts of that plan, but what they can't fault me for is at least having a plan. And that's something that's very different than what Ovid's been talking about. I think, Lori, you can see that in our first TV ads. You know, my ads came out in July and talked immediately about job creation and how we were going to spur more economic development in the state. And Ovid's first ad talks about, you know, his home in the North Country, which is all great. You know, it's nice that you have a home in the North Country, but guess what? They want to know about how you're going to bring jobs to the North Country. You know, what are the things you're going to do to actually spur economic development in those particular areas? So when people look at our tax plans, mine's a lot more aggressive than his is in helping out businesses, both large and small corporations. When they look at our budgeting plans, you know, Ovid's talked about doing this zero-based budgeting. Laura, that's something that's been tried in 17 states and has not worked in any single one of those states, including the state of New Hampshire. John Lynch has tried it twice.
That's where you start at zero and you make departments justify what they're going to do.
But it doesn't work on a state level. And in fact, the National Council of State Legislators did a report on this last year and found that every state that says that they're using zero-based budgeting really isn't using zero-based budgeting. In fact, Chris Christie, when he ran, said he was going to use it, and now he's using what I've said we need to use, which is performance-based budgeting. And that is putting metrics and outcomes on programs that we're funding to determine their necessity, to determine whether or not they're actually working, and to determine whether or not we should continue funding them in the future. You know, when I was at the Juvenile Justice Department, I asked a simple question. I said, how do we know, are we measuring the recidivism rate? Are we measuring these programs that we're, you know, are supposed to be rehabilitating juvenile delinquents, and what are the outcomes we're looking for when we do it? And we weren't measuring it at the time. And so we took a year because we had all the data, but we took a year to develop what was called the Taxpayer Accountability Report Card, where we measured the efficacy of a lot of the programs that we were funding in the Juvenile Justice Department. There's no reason why we couldn't do this across all departments in the state of New Hampshire. So certainly our approach to budgeting is very different. And that's where I talk about not having time for on the job training. You know, I've been there. I've helped craft a state budget. I've had to justify it before a House and Senate Finance Committee. Ovid's never had any dealing with how to work within a state budget. And zero-based budgeting sounds nice, but in theory, but practicality, it doesn't work. We have differences on Northern Pass. There's differences between us on gambling as well. And certainly our education reform plans are very different too. If people go on our websites, they'll see I have a 16-point education reform plan, and Ovid dedicates about 3 sentences to ed reform in the state. So there's a number of issues that when people really start drilling down and look between us, they'll say, boy, Kevin's offering a much more substantive, detailed plan. And Kevin has a better experience of knowing how to run state government because he has seen it from so many different facets, both working in the public sector and from the private sector as well.
And again, if people want to listen into our interview last week with Ovid Lamontagne, it was last Tuesday. You can go to nhpr.org and hear him speak. And let's get into some of these differences then. And a big one that you mentioned a moment ago is your plan to dramatically lower business taxes in this state.
Right.
The business profits tax, to 5%. The business enterprise tax from 0.75 to 0.25. Big reductions in taxes. Yeah. What's your thinking around that?
Well, the reality is right now we balance the state budget on the backs of small business owners in the state. And somehow we came up with this idea that if we kept increasing the business taxes, we were going to get more revenue, thinking that businesses were going to keep doing business here. And that exactly hasn't happened. In fact, you look at Massachusetts today, for all the faults that Massachusetts has, they're a more advantageous place to do business in today than New Hampshire is. That's why we're second in the country per capita on the amount of people that commute out of state every day, because so many of them are going to Massachusetts to find good paying, you know, sustainable, high paying jobs. What I've said is that we have to reform the business tax climate in our state if we're going to, number one, make sure that companies that are already here continue to expand, but number two, enticing companies from outside of New Hampshire to move into our state as well. You know, last week I had Rudy Giuliani up here. He was campaigning with me, and I was so honored to have his support, because here's someone who knows how to turn around an economy. He did it in New York City, and he did it by doing the same thing. He actually lowered the marginal tax rate in a whole different areas, but found that revenues in those areas actually grew over time because the economic base expanded. There was more economic activity going on. You know, he lowered the occupancy rate there in New York City from 22% to 12%. And people said, where are you going to get all the new revenues? Well, guess what? Revenues immediately shot up that first year. Now, in New Hampshire, we won't see this happen overnight, Laura. There's going to be a period of time where we are going to lose revenue from our business taxes. But I guarantee you, by, say, fiscal years 15 and 16, you will see that we start getting more revenue from our business taxes at a lower rate than what we're currently getting from them now, because we will expand the economic activity in our state. And I'm even willing to say, I'll put in a circuit breaker provision that says by fiscal year 16, if we're not seeing that happening, then we can stop the tax cuts there if we continue to lose revenue. But I'm so confident that this will work. You know, there's no reason why New Hampshire can't lead the way in being that most economically competitive state, but it has to start there. And that's a big difference between Ovid and I, because I've said we need to reduce the business profits tax from 8.5 to 5% over 7 years. He's only about cutting it to down to 8%. I mean, that's, you know, you might as well do nothing at that point then. That's not even going to move the needle by doing that. And the other thing he wants to do is he wants to target tax credits to certain businesses. You know, he's saying if you're a manufacturing company, we'll give you a tax credit through the BET. Or if you're a company that pays off someone's student loans, we'll give you a tax credit too. Well, you know what? Why are we picking winners and losers as a state? We should be giving – I call my plan the Oprah Winfrey plan. You get a tax break. You get a – everybody gets a tax break under my plan, okay? And we need to do that for all businesses. We shouldn't be picking winners and losers as Ovid's tax plan does.
Couple questions on this. First of all, I'm interested to hear you call Massachusetts more economically competitive. Yeah. They've got a much higher tax burden than New Hampshire. They have a sales tax. They have an income tax.
That's right. Overall, they have an overall higher tax burden. And that's where, you know, New Hampshire's overall tax burden on its individuals, it's pretty good. It's about 44th from the bottom. We were 49th a decade ago, so we've slipped a little bit. But overall, it's still pretty good. But business taxes, we're not. We're not as advantageous as Massachusetts is right now. I've run into a lot of small business owners who live in the border communities but own businesses in Massachusetts, because their accountants, they've done the books, and they said you're better off owning your business in Massachusetts today than you are in the state of New Hampshire, because you can keep more of your money, you can grow more jobs doing it that way. And that's a real problem for us as a state. And we know, Laura, companies are mobile. You know, they'll go to the path of least resistance. It's what's happened in our own country right now. You see companies moving overseas. Why? Well, because they believe it's more economically advantageous for them to do that. Now, we're starting to see some of those jobs come back as wages start to go up overseas. But it's the same thing in our country as well. Companies in the States, they'll go around to the path of least resistance. They look at what all the factors are when they're determining whether or not a state's a good state to do business in or not. CNBC came out with its rankings not that long ago of best states to do business in, and found that New Hampshire was, we ranked 19th out of 50th. We were 17th last year, we're 19th now.
Where's Massachusetts in that?
It's a good question. I'd like to see where Massachusetts was at. But you have to look at all the different variables that they use to determine where a state lines up. Now, you might say, wow, New Hampshire 19th, that sounds pretty good. But when you look at the areas we did good in the subcategories, quality of life, where do you think we are?
Very good.
Number one. But when you look at cost of doing business, we're 35th. When you look at infrastructure, we're 45th. When you look at skilled labor, we're somewhere in the 40s as well. So all of these other areas that a lot of times companies look at and say, is that a good place to do business in? We're very low on the totem pole, and those are the areas we need to get better in.
One more question on this,
sure.
And then so many other things I want to talk to you about, including gambling in the Northern Pass.
Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of people about economic development over my many years of doing this program, and a lot of them say, and I'm sure you've heard this before, part of what makes Massachusetts so successful is that higher education and that willingness to invest in higher education. Sure, they have lower business taxes, but they've got the revenue base to continue to support that great system of higher education in this state. If New Hampshire doesn't have a sales or income tax and we cut business taxes as deeply as you suggest, where does the money come for that other, you know, sure, less tangible stuff, but good roads, good schools, a great public university system.
Sure.
Businesses want that, too.
They do. They do,
It's
Laura.
Not just about the taxes.
No, it isn't. And that's why I've said you look at all those variables. You got to look at skilled labor, investments in higher ed, energy costs, healthcare costs, your business tax. So all of these different things. And the way you're able to invest and fund those things is by growing your economy. You don't grow your economy by raising taxes on people, on individuals, and on businesses as well. You grow your economy by doing what you can to make it the most prosperous environment. That's why I've said we will get more revenue. If you want more revenue to invest in these areas, to invest in things like infrastructure improvements, things we do badly need, especially in the North Country, Cheshire County, Grafton, all these different areas in the state. The only way we're going to get more jobs to those areas, Laura, we got to put it on the table now, is to make the infrastructure improvements that need to bring commerce, that you need to bring commerce into those areas. You can't get there from here right now. That's why the jobs aren't going up there. You know, I'm equidistant between Portsmouth and Keene right now, where I live in Litchfield. It takes me 45 minutes to Portsmouth. It takes me an hour and a half to get to Keene, and my cell phone drops at least four times on my way out there. That's why the jobs aren't there today in Keene.
Okay, but how do you make the infrastructure investments
revenue? I'm not reducing state revenue. I'm actually growing state revenue by lowering our business taxes, because you see more economic activity going on in the state, deregulating business as well. You know, a great example of this. I visited Red Hook Brewery out in Portsmouth a number of months ago, and the reason I went out there is because we had this regulation in the state that said you couldn't brew certain flavors of beer in the state for the craft beer industry. They were doing hundreds of thousands of dollars in business outside of New Hampshire because of an onerous regulation like this.
What kind of beer was it? I'm just curious.
It's craft beer.
But you can't brew certain flavors of beer?
Exactly. It's something that had been on the books since Prohibition that said you couldn't brew these certain flavors, okay? And guess what? The legislature and the governor did something about it. They finally took the regulations off the books. So now a company like Red Hook, because these regulations don't exist anymore, they can do all that business here in New Hampshire. And guess what that means? That's more tax revenue right there. You're going to get more tax revenue from lowering the marginal rate and deregulating small business in this state. You grow the economy that way, and then you have the monies to invest in things like higher ed, roads and bridges, and infrastructure improvements.
All right, coming up, more comments from you, questions, calls, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Altus Investment Group in Concord, offering fee-only investment management and helping individuals invest in socially responsible companies online at altusinvest.com. From the Flying Monkey in Plymouth, presenting dinner and a show with tributes to the rock and soul icons of Vegas, Elvis, Aretha, Tina, and more this Saturday. Tickets at flyingmonkeynh.com. And North Branch Construction, 54 years experience building custom homes to multi-million dollar eco-friendly commercial buildings on time, on budget, online at northbranch.net.
NHPR is your place for election coverage, for finding out who the candidates are and where they stand on issues important to you. NHPR is also your place for live coverage primary night as results come in from around the state and the stage is set for the general. We're also your place for candidate debates, congressional and gubernatorial. Stay tuned this election season to NHPR and our campaign page at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our coverage of the New Hampshire gubernatorial primaries continues with Democratic candidate Jackie Sille. You can email us your questions for candidate Sille before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today, it's also about the gubernatorial campaign. Republican candidate Kevin Smith of Litchfield is with us. And Republican primary voters, let's hear from you. What do you want to know about where Mr. Smith stands on the issues? If you're undecided, decided in this primary? What information might help you make up your mind? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Mr. Smith, let's talk a little bit more about gambling. You and Mr. Lamontagne both support expanded gambling, but not at all in the same way. Mm-hmm. How do you think New Hampshire should approach this?
Well, I've said what I think we can do in the state is have two licenses for expanded gaming. And my only stipulations on those licenses is that two things. One, that we have a strong regulatory infrastructure in place before any casinos are built in the states. If you look at the states that have done it well, they all have that regulatory infrastructure, and something that we'd have to have here in New Hampshire. But the other part of that is making sure that any of the revenues that you derive from expanded gaming don't go into the general treasury. And what I've said is that I'd rather see those – you know, when I worked for the state, I used to have a sign on my desk that said, government expands to absorb revenue and then some. And so if we're looking at this as being a cash cow to expand government spending or grow programs, I don't think that's the right thing to do. So I've said if we're going to get any money from it, use it for things like offsetting property taxes through more funding for education, use it to complete infrastructure projects or to start new ones. You know, I-93 is still $250 million in the hole. We have to get that project completed. But those would be my two stipulations on it. And that plan differs from my primary opponent in that, you know, he's picking a monopoly. He has said we're going to have one site and one site only at Rockingham Park. And, you know, all the more I think we should have a fair bidding process, you know, because of Ovid's involvement with Rockingham Park. His law firm that he's a partner at represents Rockingham. And I think that the process needs to be more transparent than that. So that's why I've said I think New Hampshire can have two licenses. I've talked to the lottery director about this, Charlie McIntyre. I think anything more than two is too many. I don't think our population can support that. But I think we'd be okay with two licenses. But they should be going out to a fair bidding process in the state.
What about the idea that as Massachusetts expands its gambling, it's just not worth it for New Hampshire to even get into this business?
Well, I mean, the reality is, as they do expand, we're now going to be losing that revenue to the state of Massachusetts. And when the Center for Public Policy Studies looked at Massachusetts expanding into this area, they've pretty much said that at 70 to 80% of any of the social costs that would come as a result, New Hampshire would get anyway. So the reality is if those social costs are going to be here irregardless, we might as well keep the revenues here. But again, we shouldn't have proliferation of expanded gaming either. And that's why, you know, it would have to be a very limited plan. But I do think it's something that we could do here in New Hampshire and also not affect the quality of life that we have as well.
I have read that when you were a state representative and when you were at Cornerstone, you were against gambling. Is that right?
I was. And if you look at when I testified against it back in the prior plans when I was at Cornerstone, there were primarily two reasons. One, proliferation. Every single plan that was on the table talked about having four casinos, six casinos, tens of thousands of slot machines, which I thought was way too many for the state of New Hampshire. But the other bigger reason for that was that the revenues were always going to the general fund. They were going to just grow more government and spend more on more government programs, which I said I didn't think was appropriate. And so I've actually been pretty consistent in saying that I still don't support those things as a candidate for governor now. But I do think there is a right way to do this. And certainly if that's the bill that the legislature crafted, it's something that I would support.
Let's go back to our listeners. Again, the number for you to join us with Republican gubernatorial candidate Kevin Smith is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Ray in Amherst is waiting. Hi, Ray. Go ahead. You're on the air with Kevin Smith.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Laura. Yeah, I think I heard Mr. Smith say a little while ago that he wanted to reduce the business taxes, and I guess that sounds really great. And,
yeah.
And that sounds like something that all Republicans want to do. They want to cut taxes. But in our state, we've had that done in the last few years. We've had a spending cut. We've decimated our college program here in New Hampshire. So my question is, if you reduce taxes, and you said you didn't expect to get back to sort of parity until 2016. What happens between now and 2016? Where does the money come from to run things in this state if you're going to reduce taxes
in the intervening years? Thanks a lot for the call, Ray. Go ahead.
Sure, Ray. It's a great question, and it's something I've thought through very much. Again, I'm not into political candidates who just give a lot of lofty rhetoric and regurgitate sound bites. And I've thought through these issues. Again, I believe it's important to reduce those business taxes to spur more economic development. But in that first budget cycle, when we're going to be reducing those taxes, you will have to find other areas where you can make up for the reductions in the revenue from the business taxes. And I know from someone who's worked in state government, there's still inefficiencies that we can that are in state government that we can find as cost savings. For instance, you know, there was a governor's commission in 2003 that looked at inefficiencies in state government. It was a bipartisan commission. It made great recommendations. It found that in the first year alone, you could save $74 million. And these were not things like personnel cuts and cutting things like health care benefits. These were things like consolidating state agencies, securities, banking, and insurance department, making it into one financial services agency, which, by the way, wouldn't it be great if we had done that before that whole FRM issue took place? Because as we found out after, those agencies weren't even communicating with one another. We could look at things like consolidating the Labor Department with Employment Security. And in fact, right now we have the Labor Commissioner acting as the acting commissioner for Employment Security. You know, there's no reason why we need to have four separate different commissioners. We could have just the two, a commissioner and assistant commissioner, and have one agency. Many other states have done this. So anyways, there's a lot of places where we could restructure state government to save that money in the first few years. And in fact, if that commission in 2003 found that over 5 years, you could save up to $420 million. But I really only need to find those savings for the first 2 years as we start reducing those business taxes, because I believe by the next budget, by those next two fiscal years, you will start to see revenues from business taxes go back up and go back up beyond where they were previously. With regard to the last budget, the last budget, it did reduce spending a lot. And part of the reasons it did reduce spending is because there was a budget deficit. And in Governor Lynch's own words, after he was reelected, we had a deficit we had to deal with. Now, there'll be disputes among Republicans and Democrats of how big that deficit was. But the reality was there was no more money to go around. And so there did need to be spending cuts. The nice thing is that it appears anyway that, when the next governor takes over, they're going to be working with finally a balanced budget. They'll be able to start from square one rather than having to look at immediately where are we going to have cuts in the state budget.
Now, it's interesting because on this idea of, where you cut taxes, a rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, you have more revenue. I think that's the basic argument that you're making. This year, House Republicans cut the cigarette tax by 10 cents, saying, hey, if we cut the cost of cigarettes here in New Hampshire, more people will buy cigarettes, and this will be great, and we'll actually get more revenue at the same time. And that doesn't seem to be happening.
No. Well, look,
is that a reasonable analogy or
no? No, I don't think it is, because I think that, it's such a regressive tax. The cigarette tax. It's something that I philosophically don't believe in balancing the budget on the backs of cigarette smokers, which is why I wouldn't have supported that cut. It's also why I don't support raising it either, because I don't believe we should, through either scheme, be trying to get more revenue through our cigarette tax. I just philosophically, it doesn't sit right with me. But it's not analogous to cutting the business taxes, because when you cut business taxes, businesses their behavior changes, and the behavior changes such that they keep more money in their pockets, they grow more jobs that way, and it becomes more attractive for them to want to do business here.
Let's talk about Northern Pass. Yeah. Boy, a huge issue in New Hampshire overall for businesses looking at energy costs, but also especially, as you well know, in the North Country, people upset about the path that these power lines might take through the North Country as they bring hydropower down from Hydro-Quebec. What's your basic position on Northern Pass?
Yeah, I've been very consistent on my position from the very beginning that there's a right way and a wrong way to do this project. The wrong way is the way they've proposed. I never supported taking land through eminent domain for the project. I think it would have set a very bad precedent for the state of New Hampshire to do that. And I also don't support those towers going through the right-of-ways above ground. It would have a devastating effect on the property values of the private property owners in those areas. Folks like Tom Mullen, who owns the Owl's Nest Resort up in Campton, he hasn't been able to sell a place in over a year because he has to disclose to every potential buyer that, in fact, they may have towers going through their backyard. And of course, people aren't buying properties at that point. So it's already having an effect before it's even built on the private property owners. And what I've said is that we need to look at either burying the lines. I know Senator Forrester came up with a study committee that looked at perhaps having an energy corridor, things that other states have done as well to run the lines down. But, the protection of the private property owners, in my opinion, is paramount in this project. And I've let PSNH know my position on it, that I've been steadfastly against the way they've proposed it. Now, again, this differs from my opponent, who's whose firm again represents PSNH in this project. And he's really, frankly, been all over the map on this particular issue.
He told us he supported burying the lines.
Well, that's what he told you, you know, last week. But when we were debating out in Keene a couple of weeks ago, he said that there actually had been no proposed route on the table, which I was kind of taken aback on because I'm saying, what do you think everyone's so up in arms about? In fact, I said that during the debate. I said if there was no proposed route on the table, everybody wouldn't have been, you know, so out against this project. There absolutely was a proposed route. As far as I know, that still hasn't been squared away. And that's where I think we need leadership from the corner office to say, all right, let's see if we can't come up with a compromise here that Northeast Utilities and PNH can do this project, can get the electricity from Hydro-Québec, but it's done in a way that doesn't affect our environment and doesn't affect the private property rights of the landowners throughout the entire state of New Hampshire. And I think the best way to do that is by burying those lines.
We've done, as you can imagine, multiple shows on this topic, yeah. And we've asked project officials multiple times, and they have consistently said, no, it's not feasible to bury the lines. So where do you go from there?
Well, you know, again, I mean, they know my position on this, and it still has to go through the site evaluation committee, and that's something that the governor, you know, can have a significant leverage on that particular committee. And the reality is I'm going to be sticking up for the people, especially in the North Country, but folks that are all along those routes where the right-of-ways are, where they want to put those towers in, and saying this is wrong for New Hampshire. You know, I'm all for diversifying our energy grid and finding new sources of energy to make sure that we have the cheapest electricity costs that we can have, because that is another big issue as we face in New Hampshire right now, is we have some of the highest energy rates, even though we're a net exporter of energy.
And so big issue for businesses.
Yeah, it is. So we have to have a long-term energy plan that's going to make it attractive for businesses to want to do business here by having lower electric rates, but not at all costs, Laura, you know, and not at the cost of, as I said before, devastating the property values of the private property owners.
A couple last questions that I'd like to ask you on the more biographical side,
sure.
If I could. I just have a couple minutes left. You are a strong Catholic. How has your faith informed your politics?
My faith's very important to me, it's important to me. It's something that's personal to me as well. And it's funny because, you know, New Hampshire, you always see the surveys that, you know, ask the question, do you go to church? And New Hampshire is, I think, one of the least church states.
Number two after Vermont.
Right,
yes.
After Vermont. I think we're always swapping places with Vermont, too. But then if you look deeper into the surveys, you know, and that ask the question, are you spiritual? The numbers go way up. And I think, yeah, maybe it's kind of the Yankee attitude that we all have up here in the Northeast. But I think there are a lot of spiritual people here in the state whose faith are important to them. But it's something that's very deeply personal as well. And so while my faith is very important to me, it's not something that I wear on my sleeve per se. Because I think it's deeply personal to everyone individually.
How does that inform your stand on abortion? Against it in all cases, no exceptions?
You know, look, I mean, it certainly informs my opinion on that particular issue. But there's also political realities as well that you have to deal with on that particular issue. And so, you know, as governor, you have to take all those things, you know, into account. You have to take your personal beliefs, but you also have to take the political realities as well whenever you're dealing with a sensitive issue like that, and work around those things as those issues come to your desk.
What's your personal preference? If you could just say, you know, never mind that I have to work with the legislature,
yeah,
and so forth, would you be against abortion in all,
you know,
cases or any,
Laura,
exceptions?
I'm pro-life. I believe in the dignity, the value, and the worth of all human life. That's my personal opinion on it. I'm also aware that, look, legalized abortion is the law of the land. And nothing about my personal beliefs are going to change that unless something ever happened at the Supreme Court level. That's my general belief on it.
And I have to ask you this because,
sure,
it's been in the news. How do you feel about the comments by the U.S. Senate candidate in Missouri, Todd Akin, who said pregnancy from what he called legitimate rape is rare and that rape victims,
yeah,
should not be allowed to have an abortion?
Shameful.
How do you feel about the comment, but also the policy?
Well, I mean, the comment itself was ignorant. It was probably stupid, for lack of a better word, and he probably should step down from his race. It was incredibly insensitive for him to make that particular comment. You know, as I said before, you know, my own personal belief is that I'm pro-life.
So even in the cases of a rape.
Well, you know,
you
look at, I mean,
abortion.
You know what? That's the law of the land. You can have, you can have an abortion in those circumstances. My personal, you know, Laura, if this is something, if this is a tragic, horrific situation, if it was something that happened to my daughter, you know, she's going to make that choice. I would like to believe that my wife and I would come around her and support her with as much love and as much caringness and support as we could give her. And if she made the choice to keep the baby, certainly we would, you know, be there for her and helping to raise that child. But at the end of the day, it's a choice that she has to make because that is the law of the land.
I have to ask you this one last question. For 17 years, I just read this in one of the national papers. For 17 years, you've been the announcer at the Friday night football games in Londonderry, the voice of the Lancers.
Yes.
Two questions. Do you have to give that up if you become governor? And second question, can you do a little voice of the Lancers for us right now on the radio?
All right. So the answer to the first question is I don't believe I have to give it up unless there's it's only four Friday nights out of the year that I do the public address announcing at the Friday night football. It does seem reasonable. Unless there's a crisis I have to deal with, I'd still like to give back to the community in that way. And, I'm already warming up for the first home game. It's September 7th. It's a Friday night and sounds a little like, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Londonderry High School's Lancer Park for tonight's home opener Division I football contest. See, Laura, if I don't win the election, you might have a co-host in line for you.
Kevin Smith, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate
Laura,
your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That's Kevin Smith, a Republican candidate for New Hampshire governor. He's today president of a public relations consulting firm. He's a Republican from Litchfield. Tomorrow we'll have Jackie Silley with us, Democrat, also running for governor. We've spoken earlier with Ovid Lamontagne and Maggie Hassan. You can find out more on our website, nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about our show, get extra links and materials. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.